Last month, my daughter and I went to see the movie Three Identical Strangers, a documentary about triplets who were adopted by three different families and were not aware of each other's existence until they were about 19 or 20. And some of you, it was big in the news. I think the year was 1980. They were on a ton of talk shows, so some of you may remember that story. They discovered that they were womb mates, the ultimate in kinship. The movie chronicles their delight in discovering each other and then explores the unclear motives of the systems that separated them, and finally follows the very human challenges of the boys moving into adulthood. So many echoes of the stories we hear in the Bible. I would like to propose the idea that we are all womb mates. Wombs are messy, blood-filled places, as many of us in this room can tell you. And yet, wombs are where the miracle of birth occurs. Our bodies create a blood-lined nest where new life can attach and develop. Through the umbilical cord, the yet-to-be-born child shares its blood with its mother. In the Hebrew tradition, it is the blood that carries the life force of any living being. Transmission of life force requires blood. In the Hebrew language, the words mercy and womb are derived from the same root. When we receive God's mercy, we are welcomed home, welcomed back into the protection and healing of God's all-encompassing love, God's womb. We all share this deep in our beings connection. God is our lifeblood, and we are all womb mates. John's gospel does not have a Last Supper. Instead, in chapter 6, we get this message about the bread of heaven three times in a row. And so for us, through the lectionary, 3 weeks in a row. Last week and the week before, we heard Jesus say, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." That is much more easily digestible than this week's, "My flesh is real food, and my blood is real drink. By eating my flesh and drinking my blood, you enter into me, and I enter into you." Jesus' statement, "Live in me and let me live in you," is beautiful, but I'm a little uncomfortable with "eat my body and drink my blood." Blood imagery makes us uncomfortable. It makes the religious elites in this story uncomfortable. That's why they challenge Jesus. But they would have been steeped in the knowledge that the blood that carries our life force carried Jesus' life force. And that's the point he's trying to make. In her book, Amazing Grace, A Vocabulary of Faith, Kathleen Norris has a reflection on blood. She notes that we are much more comfortable with blood in our entertainment than we are in our religion. And she invites us to reclaim that connection. She writes that blood is the root of the word bless. In Exodus, Moses sprinkled the altar and those gathered with blood. She reminds us that Christianity is based in the symbolism of blood. She reminds us that Jesus is flesh, blood, divinity, all three. She states that the incarnation remains a scandal to anyone who wants religion to be a purely spiritual matter, an etherized bloodless bliss. Norris makes the connection that human blood is holy because Jesus was human, and concludes, "Blood includes us in the incarnation. Not so crazy after all, but an ancient thing and wise. The rhythm of life that we carry in our veins is not only for us, but for others as Christ's incarnation was for all. We all have a circulatory system and have blood coursing through our veins and arteries right now. This blood is bringing oxygen and nutrients to every cell as it takes away carbon dioxide and other wastes. We eat food, and it is digested and delivered to our cells through our blood. This is happening right now. Can you feel your pulse? And I want to offer now an image from a superhero movie. Have any of you seen Black Panther? In it, there's a ritual performed in Wakanda when a new king is becoming king. A purple pod is plucked from a plant. It's placed in a dish and ground until it becomes liquid. And then that dish is held to the king's mouth and poured into him. That liquid gives the king superhuman strength and power and also leads to him having a mystical experience. And in that scene, if you remember, you can actually see his veins and arteries filled with that purple liquid. And I really was moved by that image, that he took that liquid in bodily. T'Challa takes this liquid into every cell of his being. For us, the communion ritual offers us an opportunity to enter the mystery of Christ's life, death, and resurrection. But what if we were to imagine communion similar to the way that liquid was offered in Black Panther? What if we were to take in bodily the connection, peace, strength, and love we are offered and allow it to enter our bloodstream? What if we were to imagine being re-infused with our creation, our belovedness, the Jesus within us? What if we allowed ourselves to be bodily and spiritually nourished and sustained? In addition to talking about Jesus, about entering into Jesus and allowing Jesus to enter into us, John also speaks of eternal life in this passage. He is not referring to the length of our life, but the fullness of it, the abundance of it. He is talking about a life in which our living is based on kinship with all. Kinship with all. And Jesus knew that kinship is not easy. It's not easy with those we already recognize as blood relations, and certainly not easy with those we are asked to recognize as blood relations. For the past 6 weeks, I have been supporting my mother and brother in working through a conflict in which they both feel deeply wounded. They love each other deeply, but have struggled to get along for decades, and this was a new wound for both of them. What makes it so hard is that they are intimately connected and care deeply about each other. None of us cry for days and weeks about a relationship that doesn't mean anything to us. So that's an example of, you know, folks who I recognize as my blood relatives, folks who recognize each other as blood relatives. And I also have a story about the cathedral community that I am blessed to be a part of, and a way that I wrestled with kinship in that community. So folks who I've come to recognize as blood relatives. There's one woman that I have become strongly connected with. I'm going to call her Melissa. And I was supporting another woman who I'm going to call Susie. as she navigated the end of a romantic partnership in which she did not feel safe. And Melissa watched me supporting Susie. Melissa is closely connected to that romantic partner in this relationship that was ending. And Melissa was really confused and hurt. How could you support Susie if you love me? Just did not make any sense to her. When I saw her at Cathedral, she would not make eye contact with me. I tried to speak to her, and she rebuffed me. I knew that she was deeply wounded. I held on to the fact that she would not be deeply wounded if she didn't care, if we didn't have a relationship. And I took in my own tears and knew that I would not care deeply unless we had a relationship, unless we cared deeply about each other. And I recognized that Melissa had never experienced a love that was broad enough to care for her and walk with her, while at the same time caring for her perceived enemy and walking with her perceived enemy. And it took time. I had to give her some space and time and reach out and say, I care about you and I am really sorry that I hurt you in this way. And when you are ready, I very much want to talk this through with you if you would give me that opportunity. And she did take some time and space, and she did reach out. She acknowledged that she didn't really want to talk to me, but that her partner thought it would be a good idea. And it took a lot of courage for her to do that. So it took time and space and courage, but we have worked through this. And I am so grateful for her openness to the possibility of that broader love that can hold all of that. I am grateful that we were both able to remember that we are womb mates, that we both come from God's womb. In his book, Tattoos on the Heart, Greg Boyle tells the story of two homeboys, Clever and Travieso, who are from rival gangs. And we've talked about this story in the book study because it's a powerful story. Travieso was already working for Homeboy Industries when Clever showed up for his first day of work. As Greg introduced them, he could tell that there was a difficult history between them. And he knew that it was about much more than them being from rival gangs. This conflict between them was deep and personal. So he asked Clever, "Do you feel like the two of you can work together? Because if not, I have other folks who would take this job. So take some time and think about it. Do you think you can do this?" Both men, young men, were just staring at their sneakers at this point, couldn't make eye contact. But Clever stayed. He took the job. 6 months later, Travieso was brutally beaten and died. Clever called Greg late at night, the night after Travieso had died. And not knowing that Travieso was already dead, he acknowledged to Greg how messed up that it was that this had happened. And he asked, "Is there anything I can do? Can I give him my blood?" There was silence on the phone between them, both of them crying. And then Clever said, "He was not my enemy. He was my friend." I wonder whether, as Clever offered to give Travieso his blood, he was also thinking, "I want him to live. Can I give him my blood? I want him to live." And that is what I hear Jesus saying to us in this passage from John. "Can I give you my blood? I want you to live abundantly."